Hi, I'm Lale Arakoglu, host of Women Who Travel. Each story from our guests and listeners is totally unique and utterly personal. We love hearing about your first impressions when visiting someplace new.
My first trip to the Patagonia region was on the Argentine side. I couldn't believe the expansive territory. It's like being in Tibet. The emptiness and the harshness really, I found transformative.
Or a story told when safely back on dry land.
You know, things happened every single day. I ran out of gas on a jet ski in the middle of the ocean. And I was like, what if a sea creature comes to eat me? But then I'm delusional. I was like, I'll make friends with it and it won't eat me. And maybe I'll ride that back to shore.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
Join me, Lale Arakoglu, every week for more adventures on Women Who Travel, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
We have this database of about 200, 250 women who would be really good candidates for the podcast. And then we have these sort of lively discussions where we narrow it down. And Clara came up, and you are going to spit when you hear this. The reason we thought she was so interesting is that we heard that she had done all this weather work. So I'm like, really? And I knew nothing.
Right.
I Googled her and it said, you know, you have this woman to thank for your weather app.
You read it in the Smithsonian, you see it on Wikipedia, you assume that there's some kind of evidence for it.
If you look up Clara Don von Neumann online, you'll see variations on the weather app story again and again. And after 5 episodes focused entirely on Clara and the work she did, we haven't mentioned one thing about weather. Did we miss something big? I'm Katie Hafner, and this is Lost Women of Science, where we unearth the stories of scientists who haven't gotten the recognition they deserve. I hope my voice doesn't sound too different, because I'm recording from my closet on day 16 of COVID isolation. This is a bonus episode for our second season, A Grasshopper in Very Tall Grass, which was all about Clara Don von Neumann, Clary to her friends and family. She was one of the earliest computer programmers. This episode zeroes in on the very first weather forecasts done on a computer, and the hand Clary might have played in that. It's also about the way someone's legacy gets remembered, actually misremembered, and how that gets etched into our collective historical memory.
I'm John Knox. I'm a professor of geography and a meteorologist at the University of Georgia in Athens, Georgia. My connection to Clara von Neumann is that I saw her name in the acknowledgement section of one of the most famous papers in my field, and I wanted to know more about her.
When we first started looking into Clary's story, we found article after article calling her the lost figure you should thank for modern-day weather forecasting. So that was intriguing, and several of the articles quoted somebody named John Knox. So we got in touch with him. And it turns out, John has known Clary's name for a long time, ever since he first came across that famous paper on meteorology.
When I was a graduate student, one of the first papers I think I ever read was called Numerical Integration of the Barotropic Vorticity Equation. And this was a landmark paper. It was the first paper to prove that you could forecast the weather using numbers.
Attempts to predict the weather go back thousands of years, but numerical forecasting in the modern sense is actually pretty new.
We didn't have numerical weather forecasting for World War II, for example.
Numerical weather forecasting, the idea of using mathematical models to make weather predictions, had been theorized about at that point, but it didn't really take off in a practical way until 1946. That's when a team of scientists, including Clary's husband John von Neumann, started exploring how to use electronic computers to predict the weather.
This is weather, one of nature's ever-changing mysteries.
Weatherman.
Now, recent experiments show that data from guided weather rockets, radar observation stations, weather stations, all of this can be fed into the computer all in a matter of minutes.
In 1950, a team including Clary's husband, Johnny, ran the first numerical weather prediction on the ENIAC, an early electronic computer. This was big. And the reason it was big was that before electronic computers came along, it took scientists 6 weeks to predict just 6 hours of weather. You'd know what the weather was for May 15th, but by the time you knew this, it was July. So because they were so much faster than what humans could calculate, what computers like the ENIAC brought us closer to was weather forecasting in real time. In the historic paper explaining all of this, on the final page, right at the bottom, it says,
"The writers wish to thank Mrs. K. von Neumann for instruction in the technique of coding for the ENIAC and for checking the final code." And who I believe Clara von Neumann to be is not just the help with the numerical weather prediction experiment, but actually a key participant, and she should have been a co-author on this landmark paper.
At Lost Women of Science, this kind of revelation is usually music to our ears. We care about setting the historical record straight, and we know there are so many instances of scientists not getting their due. Especially women, who are often credited only in footnotes or acknowledgments, if at all. And it's not implausible that Clary did more for these experiments than she was given credit for. For starters, Clary was the expert in coding the ENIAC at this time. Plus, this weather work was done by a team that included her husband. And it took place at the Institute for Advanced Study in Princeton, New Jersey, which is where Clary lived and worked. We've seen her in this position before, you know, her right place, right time thing. And like always, when we had a question related to Clary's work, we asked Thomas Haig.
All right, so yeah, the weather simulation.
Thomas Haig is the co-author of ENIAC in Action. He's an expert on all things ENIAC. And he's published more on Clary's programming than just about anyone else. So when it came to her weather work, that's who we turned to. But we weren't the first.
So when Ananya was writing his book, he sent us the draft chapter on computing, and we were able to, help him steer it and make it even better.
Tom's talking about Anano Bhattacharya, who wrote the new John von Neumann biography, The Man from the Future.
And a little bit before the book was published, we got a message from him saying, like, did we miss something here? You know, what's this about Clara von Neumann and the ENIAC weather simulations?
Anano had come across some references to Clary's work on computerized weather forecasts. And so, like us, he asked Tom about them.
That was the first time I'd come across this article or the general idea that Clara von Neumann was the guiding force behind the numerical weather simulations.
As far as we could tell, this all started with a Forbes article from 2017. The headline was this: How a Woman You Never Heard Of Helped Enable Modern Weather Prediction. And the article was all about Clary. It was written by a colleague of John Knox's at the University of Georgia.
We just taught a class on hidden figures. As a professor, it's a question. How do you encourage diversity? And our idea is to do it through curriculum.
John Knox told his colleague and his students about Clara von Neumann, how she was an overlooked programmer who, Knox believed, played a much bigger role in the computerized weather simulations than she had gotten credit for. So far, so good. John Knox is quoted in the article saying that Clary trained the scientists on how to program and that she checked the final code, which is basically what the acknowledgement says in that 1950 paper. About 5 months after the Forbes piece came out, the Smithsonian magazine published a similar article about Clary and weather work. John Knox is quoted again. He reiterates his belief that she should have been a co-author on the 1950 paper. But in this article, Clary's role went beyond advising the scientists on their code. Here's Tom Haig reading from the original text.
So I'll read that paragraph. During these 5 weeks, Clara was a constant fixture. It was she who checked the final code for the experiment. She was involved with ENIAC from the ground up, and according to letters and journal entries written by Charney Platzman and other team members, had a major leadership role in the meteorology project.
Okay, this is how stuff gets lodged into the record. So in this Smithsonian account, Clary wasn't only advising or checking code. She was basically helming the whole project. And to be honest, when I first came across Clara von Neumann's name, I thought this would be the story we'd tell. Our season would be about her leadership role in these numerical weather prediction forecasts and about her not getting the credit she deserved. When people asked who she was, we'd go on and on about how she did all this weather modeling. And then we went to the Library of Congress to look through the von Neumann papers.
So we're sitting there looking through this stuff, and I see these folders that are just meteorology. And I think, great, here it is. This is going to explain everything. And I see absolutely nothing about Clary.
That's me. I'm reminiscing about our time at the Library of Congress with Sophie McNulty, one of our producers.
And during lunch, we were waiting in line to get our food. And Katie, I just remember like your face just distraught. You were like, guys, I don't know if we have a season.
I'm like, oh my gosh, we've come all this way. We'd gone way down the road with Clary and we find nothing.
And immediately, you know, my heart's racing and in my head I have all these doubts, but I'm trying to calm Katie down and I'm like, there's definitely stuff. So I was, you know, on my phone frantically in line pulling quotes up being like, look here, here's evidence of things that she did.
Sophie remembered reading passages about Clary's coding work in George Dyson's book, Turing's Cathedral.
And Katie knew George Dyson and immediately emailed him. And
that was that.
Once we spoke with George, all the pieces started falling into place. We learned about Clary's work with the Monte Carlo method and with nuclear weapons. And we had our season. But the question of Clary's role in the weather simulations, it kept bugging me. And it kept bugging Tom Haig, too. He'd taken a microscope to all the material he could find.
I didn't come across correspondence from her related to this. But we do have the correspondence that's going backwards and forwards between the people in the ENIAC group and the people in the numerical meteorology group at the Institute for Advanced Studies. And the footnote is basically the only way that we know that she did anything.
This idea that Clary was the computer scientist to thank for your smartphone's weather app, it was spreading. From the Forbes and Smithsonian articles, it then reached The Guardian in the UK. And Tom was pretty sure it was wrong.
So it's saying that she was doing the same job for the meteorology project, being hands-on, writing the code, working with the punch cards, setting the thing up, that she did with the Monte Carlo simulations. And the problem is, there is absolutely nothing that I've seen in the archival evidence or in any of the work that people have written about the calculations to support that idea. So there is absolutely no evidence to suggest that she was part of the group that went down to run the calculations, and therefore she clearly was not the person who was working hands-on with the punch cards.
So while Clary may have advised the team or reviewed the code the team wrote, it seems unlikely that she was one of the main programmers. And there's little evidence indicating that she was actually on location with the ENIAC to run the weather simulations. Tom points out that there isn't always a paper trail. It's possible that Clary was talking face-to-face with people in Princeton, and we just don't have a way of finding out one way or another. But if you've learned anything about Tom from listening to this season, you know that he's anything but careless. He takes the time to get it right. And he cares about other people getting it right, too, especially when those other people are the ones with the job of telling the rest of the world. So Tom wrote a lengthy email to the Smithsonian explaining each inaccuracy he found in the article.
The response I got was, Dear Mr. Haig, thank you for your email to the Smithsonian Magazine regarding the article, Meet the Computer Scientists You Thank for Your Smartphone's Weatherer. Your response is being shared with the digital editorial director. And that was it.
So we wrote to Smithsonian Magazine, and the editor we heard back from said they did get Tom's letter, but didn't follow up at the time. I explained that there were some significant problems with the story, so they made some significant changes. We consider that a win. In the meantime, we told John Knox about Tom's findings, that while Clary was the expert on coding for the ENIAC, there was not any evidence that she was the one who coded or ran the program for the weather simulations. Maybe that acknowledgement in the 1950 paper was entirely appropriate for what she had done. Maybe she had, in fact, been an advisor and nothing more.
So it may be that she was not intimately involved with the production of the weather forecast code, but that she set up everything for that. I'm not 100% sure about that either.
Together, we decided to take a look at the 1950 paper where it all began, and we noticed that Clary's not the only one who's thanked at the end.
So there are a couple of people named that may have actually been doing the computations.
The last line of the acknowledgments reads,
"We're also greatly obliged to the staff of the computing laboratory of the Ballistics Research Laboratories for help in coding the problem for ENIAC and for running the computations."
So maybe Clary didn't actually do much on the computer itself for this project. That credit probably belongs to the operators. But Clary does get pretty high billing.
It's a more than a footnote. She's in the acknowledgments.
Yeah.
And she's the very first.
She is the first. So depending on the exact details of her contribution, you're changing my mind a little bit. I think it would have been generous to have given her a co-authorship. I would have done it, I think, because, again, without the ability to program the computer, where are you?
Coming up, we look at the danger of the great woman theory of history. I'm Katie Hafner, and this is Lost Women of Science. Hi, I'm Katie Hafner, co-executive producer of Lost Women of Science. We need your help. Tracking down all the information that makes our stories so rich and engaging and original is no easy thing. Imagine being confronted with boxes full of hundreds of letters in handwriting that's hard to read, or trying to piece together someone's life with just her name to go on. Your donations make this work possible. Help us bring you more stories of remarkable women. There's a prominent donate button on our website. All you have to do is click. Please visit lostwomenofscience.org. That's lostwomenofscience.org. Lost Women of Science tells the stories of scientists whose work has gone largely unrecognized, which means that information about these extraordinary female scientists can be hard to come by. If you have information about women like Clara von Neumann, who worked in early computing, or if you know someone who worked as a human computer, we would love to know about them. Please go to lostwomenofscience.org and click Contact Us. We look forward to hearing from you.
Unlike computing itself, the history of computing has no automatic error-checking and correcting devices.
Tom Hague's reading a quote from physicist Nick Metropoulos, and it's true. With computing, often a program just won't run if there's something missing or the code has an error. But with history, one misremembered or misattributed event can spiral. It enters the record, from a lecture in a classroom to an article online to Clara von Neumann's Wikipedia entry. And I get it. It's a good story, the woman who invented modern weather prediction, but it's not the right story. This bonus episode is our attempt to get it right, and we have to ask, if Clary is getting the credit, who isn't? Who are we missing?
This is one of 10 of the notebooks just for meteorology. There's a number of additional notebooks.
Caitlin Rizzo is the archivist at the Institute for Advanced Study, that haven for super geniuses.
You know, it's many, many days. Like, each notebook roughly maps onto a month of labor of someone sitting at this computer and just writing down, this is what calculation was off.
After the 1950 paper came out, a team at the Institute for Advanced Study continued to work on numerical weather forecasting. Caitlin is researching their efforts. As an archivist, Caitlin spends a lot of time thinking about what makes it into the historical record, how someone's legacy, ideas, and experience get documented and preserved.
I do have a photo of some of the women workers on the project on the table as well. And a lot of them remain unidentified. So we've made a couple of attempts to have individuals that were involved with the project help us identify some of these women. Because, you know, a lot of women were doing this computing work.
And while this is an ongoing project, there are some names that Caitlin is sure of.
So this is Hedy Selberg's work.
Caitlin points to a typewritten report with the title, Explanation to the Code for the Astrophysical Problem. We know Hedy's name in part because she's credited on this document, but also because she was married to someone on the faculty at the Institute for Advanced Study. She, like Clary, was what was known as an institute wife.
They are these amazingly brilliant women who maybe were not as credited in academia, right? But who were on this campus and did amazing work.
And Hedy Selberg wasn't the only one.
So I mentioned the Smagorinskys. That's one.
Joseph Smagorinsky is a big name in meteorology. He worked on the 1950 simulation, and he went on to expand the possibilities for weather modeling with computers. As for the people who ran the programs and did the calculations, at least one of them was Joseph Smagorinsky's wife, Margaret. She'd been a statistician for the U.S. Weather Bureau.
And her husband is incredibly noted, but she didn't have a Wikipedia page when we first contacted the family, and so that's something we're working on now.
Caitlin has a word for the kind of work that often goes missing from the historical record.
Maintenance, the work of maintenance, of caring for every day in and out is so difficult to capture in the archives because the archives is looking necessarily for what is distinct and memorable.
For Caitlin and for us, making sure that people are acknowledged is really important.
We're trying to find them again and to do the same kind of reparative work that you're doing to highlight that maybe they weren't in the official ledger, but they are part of the story.
At Lost Women of Science, we try to find the work that didn't always get top billing, and often the evidence of that work is incomplete, so we might be tempted to read between the lines. But after talking to John Knox, I knew that his well-intentioned attempts to highlight Clary's contributions were misdirected. He took that footnote and ran with it. There might be people you should thank for your smartphone's weather app, but it definitely wasn't Clara von Neumann, at least not her alone. And in fact, she might not even have played that big of a role. Giving her that credit isn't fair to Clary, or to the programmers and operators whose names we may never know. By the end of our conversation, John Knox was changing his mind.
So I guess I would go back now and maybe modify my comments. I don't know if she should have been a co-author based on what I see up to this point, but it wouldn't have happened without her. it's in one of those gray areas. I tend to be somewhat liberal with co-authorship because I think it's important to recognize the people without whom the thing could not have been done.
We think that's important too. In fact, that's part of what bothered me so much about this idea that Clary was the woman behind modern weather forecasting, as if all it took was one woman. Here's Tom Haig again.
We tend to think of history as something that is about great geniuses having ideas that are decades ahead of their time and changing the world through their brilliance. And in many ways, that's the only story that a lot of popular books and movies want to tell about science and technology.
And that's a problem because
you get to be a lone genius, by, you know, having a whole support infrastructure around you of people who are lab technicians or secretaries or performing other kinds of support roles. And those are the people who don't get remembered by history because all the credit goes to the lone genius. And I don't think the answer is to find, you know, female geniuses to celebrate the same way we celebrate the men.
When Tom and his co-author, Mark Priestley, were working on ENIAC in Action, they made a point of tracking down as many names as they could.
We tried to talk about the women who actually, you know, built the machine hands-on. We made sure to acknowledge the work of the project secretary, who was one of the first handful of people to be full-time on the ENIAC project and stuck with the machine the whole time it's being built. I think if we find ways to think about broader kinds of contributions as being meaningful, then that allows us to recognize the kinds of contributions that women were much more likely to have been making to science.
And that's the power of revisiting the historical record. If we want to challenge the patriarchy and rethink how scientific discovery happens, we have to fundamentally change the way we think about contributions and progress. It's not about recovering an individual woman who was slighted or ignored. We're not trying to just replace the lone male genius with female versions of the same thing. It's not even about lost women of science and what we do here. Instead, as chroniclers of and participants in society, we have to acknowledge the countless people who go unrecognized for all kinds of work that enables innovation. The lab techs, the administrators, the janitors, the grad students, the childcare workers, the unpaid interns, and yes, the spouses. We need to move away from the idea of disruptors and start zeroing in on the very many contributors. And that is why our credits are so damn long. This has been Lost Women of Science. Thanks to everyone who made this initiative happen, including my co-executive producer Amy Scharf, producers Ashreya Gupta, Sophie McNulty, and Sinduja Srinivasan, senior editor Nora Matheson, composer Elizabeth Yunin, and our engineers at Studio D Podcast Production, Simeon Church and Dylan Garvin. Thanks also to Brian Wally at Smithsonian Magazine and journalist Sarah Whitman, who knows I've been there too. We're grateful to Mike Fung, Kathy Bennett Warner, Dominique Guilford, Jeff Del Vizio, Meredith White, Bob Wachter, Maria Clave, Susan Kerr, Jeannie Stivers, Linda Grace, Rabbi Michael Paley, Andy Cunningham, Marina von Neumann-Whitman, George Dyson, Thomas Haig, John Knox, and our interns, Hilda Gitchell, Kylie Tanganon, Lisa Kopaeva, and Juliana Russo. Thanks also to the Computer History Museum, to Paula Goodwin, Nicole Searing, and the rest of the legal team at Perkins Coie, and to the Institute for Advanced Study, the Library of Congress, and the UCSD Special Collections for helping us with our search. Many thanks to Barnard College, a leader in empowering young women to pursue their passion in STEM, for support during the Barnard Year of Science. Lost Women of Science is funded in part by the Gordon and Betty Moore Foundation, Schmidt Futures, and the John Templeton Foundation, which catalyzes conversations about living purposeful and meaningful lives. This podcast is distributed by PRX and published in partnership with Scientific American. You can learn more about our initiative at lostwomenofscience.org or follow us on Twitter and Instagram. Find us at Lost Women of Sci. That's at Lost Women of SCI. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Katie Hafner.